Hello and welcome to Retail Gazette's Unpacked podcast, the podcast where we delve into the pressing issues facing the retail industry. I'm your host, Kieran Howells, and today we are talking about how we can truly measure the cost of customer acquisition. To talk about this subject, I am here with Phil Altoft. He is the commercial lead at Navuna, a company that knows a thing or two about the cost of customer acquisition. And we're having this conversation off the back of a piece of research that we have done in partnership with Navuna all about this subject, which we're going to delve into a bit today, and it will also be linked below the podcast, so you can check that out right now. So, I am going to ask Phil to introduce himself.
Hi, so my name is Phil Altoft, and I'm the commercial lead here at Navuna. So I head up the new business team, so anything that relates to winning new clients sits under my team, and also head up the commercial and strategic team as well. So looking at anything new to bring to the market that Navuna can service our customers with sits under my remit as well.
Amazing. Great to have you here, Phil. So let's kick off with the first question then. Why do you think so many businesses struggle to measure the cost of customer acquisition?
It's a really good question, and I think there's lots of reasons why that could be. I don't think there's sort of one golden bullet that can answer the question. A lot of the time it's really just finding the time and setting the time aside to really go through it and fully understand exactly what you're looking for. I think with business being as it is today, it's everyone running at a million miles an hour and really sort of taking that step back to look through and set time aside each week, each month, at the beginning of a project, at the end of a project, whatever that might be, to go through all the inputs, what you spent, and how many customers have you won at the end of it, and really understand that. So getting the time, I think, is the key one. I think a lot of people also may just have a lack of experience and resource in it. And I think we're all guilty of, if we don't understand it, of parking it and hoping it doesn't become a problem. So I think sometimes just hitting that head on and understanding that you might not have the experience, maybe you're a new business or growing really rapidly, and just being honest and saying, actually, I don't quite understand this, and going away, do some investigations, speak to different people and find out how they look at, you know, this whole world is key as well. And just the whole complexity around what it costs nowadays to win a customer and the different avenues you can use to win a customer, and there's not just an email chain nowadays that, you know, you can just send out an email campaign and hope for the best. You know, all the different social media platforms that you need to be involved in creates real accuracy when it comes to tracking what they cost, because sometimes, especially on a social media platform, it could be more time related, where people don't quite understand what their value of time is. So then putting all those together and really understanding where the customers have come from, you know, what area, was it the email campaign, was it the social media campaign, was it a leaflet drop, was it printed material, you know, where do those customers come from, creates really difficult answers. And then having to use all those multiple platforms, it's having the systems in the business that are well integrated across your business, so you understand and you can track per channel and then how that's rewarded you as a business as well. I think if you haven't got those, you know, integrations, maybe your CRM doesn't work with your email campaign product very well. And so again, that can create complexity and confusion and makes people just think, oh, it's too difficult to actually understand. I haven't got the tools to do this. So just, again, park it and hope for the best that come the end of the month, there's more money in the bank than when you started.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What I'm wondering, though, obviously we did this incredible research together that showed that actually the majority of businesses don't really understand the cost of acquisition within their business. What I'm wondering then is, what are the pitfalls of not understanding that? What does your business stand to lose if you don't understand the cost of customer acquisition?
I think there's lots of different dangers that can appear at lots of different times. I think the most appropriate one, or the most one on everyone's lips, is the cost of your marketing budget? Are you misallocating budget to a channel that isn't actually producing either new customers or retaining current customers and getting them to come back? I think if you don't fully understand where those costs are coming and which channel is being well received, if you don't understand that, you're throwing money away, basically, because you're just piling money into what you think is working without any data to come back to say, actually, this is working. And if it's a channel you really like and it's not working, at least then you can have the data to really understand how you can make that channel suddenly work for your business. So if you're not aware of where those costs are coming from and how that's performing, then you are just going to misallocate those funds specifically in your marketing team and have that awkward conversation of, you know, why aren't we producing things, or why are we over budget this month or this quarter? All those conversations really all come out of understanding the cost of acquisition. I think that is key. I think also if you're really not having an understanding and you are just running through this sort of blind or blinkered and hoping it all works out, it can have an effect on the long-term financial health of your business. You know, you could be thinking you're having X margin on your sales and your products, but really, if you're not taking into account the cost of acquisition, that margin could be eroded quite quickly. Where you think, you know, maybe you're using an influencer whose fees are quite high, and if you're not really taking it into account, say that margin could go very, very quickly, and then could then roll into cash flow issues down the line, budgeting issues, spending budget much quicker than you was expecting, therefore make it difficult to continually be approaching new customers. If having to pause because you've run out of budget, stop and start again in 2 weeks' time when the new monthly budget or the new quarterly budget comes, losing that consistency could have quite a detrimental impact. I think everyone, especially on social media, knows that consistency is quite key. You know, you need to be constantly posting, constantly putting content out for the algorithms to pick you up. So that's important. And then looking at long-term scalability of a business, you know, if you are higher growth, new startup, or even just a continual long-term business, not understanding how to scale your business, where you should be spending your marketing budget to win new customers or retain your current customers, could be a big issue as well. Just being able to scale quickly without making mistakes down the line and then having to turn around and then redo them. If you knew from the offset how those costs were being calculated, then maybe you could have gone a different path early in your business trajectory to really get those goals that you're looking for. So really, if you do know, to flip the question into the positive, you know, you can really focus on the profitable channels for the business. If you know that, you know, email campaign works really well for your customers, or printed leaflets, for example, then that's where you should be spending your time, spending your resources, spending your budget to make sure that, you know, that's what's going to be driving the business. Because you'll know that, you know, if you have a more effective conversion, that really leads to reduced costs. So if you understand that really well, from the offset, your costs at the end will be coming down as well if you're converting a higher proportion of customers. All of those together should really answer that.
Yeah, and I guess it's also just really impossible to have any form of long-term strategy if you don't know this really vital information.
You would assume so, yeah. You'd be surprised, I think, at the amount of people that just say aren't comfortable with these questions and conversations, so just go for it because their biggest competitor does it that way, so they're going to follow suit. Sometimes your competitor doesn't have the exact same customer demographic you have, so what they do might not work for yourself.
So going back to that report data, really surprising, 25% of retailers don't know their CAC and 35% don't measure retention rates at all. So do you think that these metrics are just really often overlooked? And also, Phil, if so, why?
I think it sort of goes back to what we spoke about earlier. I think it's less about being overlooked, but more about just setting the time aside to really go through and really understand all the different inputs and how that works. I think everyone understands what it is from a high level, but probably don't spend the time to dig in to get the real detail from spending a considerable amount of time consistently to find out, you know, what those costs are going to be driving. I'm sure some retailers don't quite see the real value. Maybe some don't quite understand what they are spending on marketing. Maybe it's just a budget they've signed off at the start of the year. If it gets spent, great. If it doesn't, extra money left in the coffers. So maybe there's just that reliance on, okay, we've set a budget, spend it how you want. As long as new customers are coming in, everyone's happy. But I think if you really drill into it, you can really find some inefficiencies and some really good efficiencies on what that budget is delivering. So having that better understanding really does lead, as I mentioned previously, a reduction in costs. It's as simple as that. If you're just doing something hoping for the best, I'm sure there's some inefficiencies in that in that method. So you'll be able to work a way to reduce that. And it goes also on to customer retention. I think a lot of people get stuck on cost of acquisition, as in winning the new customer. But it needs to be looked at, the retention and the sort of return of your customers as well. And how does your cost of acquisition reflect a repeat customer? A lot of people think, I mean, it's a lot cheaper for a repeat customer than it is to a brand new customer, but there's still costs involved in having that customer come back into store, back online. And I think sometimes in that area, the cost gets forgotten about as well, because it's a returning customer. We've already spent the acquisition costs because we won them 6 months ago. So everything else is free.
Yeah, I mean, that 35% number, 35% not measuring the cost of retention. That seems like a shocking piece of the customer life cycle is just being missed out there.
It surprised us when we got the figures back. We were surprised.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you look at the increase in privacy regulations, obviously there is a direct correlation between that and rising digital advertising costs. So I guess that has a really big impact on the rising cost of customer acquisition for retailers as well.
I think what that's done is forced retailers to think outside of the box. I think gone are the days where you can do an email campaign or a leaflet drop and sit back and expect customers to come knocking at the front door. You really need to be doing much more nowadays. You can't just rely on those traditional channels. It needs to be a wider concern, a wider thought process as to, you know, how can we do this? And not just with one channel, but with multiple channels. And it's going back to really treating customers as individuals and really understanding them a lot more. And I think there was, especially the restrictions around privacy and data regulation, is making that a much more apparent. Obviously, we've got things like, say, GDPR, cookie depreciation, a big reduction in access to sort of third-party data. Retailers really now need to be using their first-party data, the data they have from their customers, and using that in the most specific way that they can, I think is going to be key. And that links back to treating the customers as individuals, because you're seeing their information, you're seeing their buying habits, you're seeing what they're buying, and it's how can you use that data you've already collected to win more customers. And again, that can reduce the cost. If it's data you've already got, then brilliant. And that does sort of help you sidestep a lot of the costs that come around when we're looking at sort of that privacy regulation, which really is key for a lot of retailers. Competition is obviously driving up ads constantly. Digital ads, everyone's fighting for the same spot, which is causing, you know, more retailers vying for fewer highly targeted placements. So again, having that individual data that you might be able to collect yourself in those areas is key as well. And shifting to alternative channels, you know, retailers are being forced to do that, especially when it comes to the privacy regulations. And those new channels can sometimes be less measurable, which again causes issues and leads to many inefficiencies when it comes to tracking that cost. So it's been a difficult one for retailers to sort of sidestep or challenge this area of acquisition. But like most things, it can provide new opportunities, new ways of thinking. But yeah, bringing it back to that, using the data you're collecting from your customers and making it a bit more personal as you're going back to your customers, I think will be key to reducing those issues, headaches and costs.
Yeah, it seems, Phil, like now is a real time of spinning plates for a lot of retailers. And so what I am wondering is, how do you think retailers can better balance the rising cost of customer acquisition with retention efforts? I mean, this must be a huge headache for the vast majority of businesses.
It is, massively. And like most things, there's not one way to do that. There's multiple different ways that are going to work for lots of people, but it's definitely having that multi-pronged approach to this whole conversation and not being pigeonholed into one way of thinking and using one product. So when it comes to sort of retention, it's things like investing in loyalty programs, you know, really encouraging those repeat customers, those repeat spends, is a cheaper way than going for brand new customer acquisition, which can work. So you can do that obviously through incentives, and they say reduces the reliance on having to go out and win new customers. So I think investing in that loyalty program, I think loyalty's been around for a long time. I know back in 20 odd years ago when I was selling payment processing, it come with loyalty cards and things like that, gift cards. So it's always been sort of a staple diet for most retailers. But I think the point, it needs to be more reliance on that nowadays. But as we mentioned in the last question, not being able to go out and grab data left, right and centre anymore. That's key for your customers. And looking at things like the customer lifetime value nowadays, looking at the initial spend of a customer, you know, I spent £10 to get the customer to my website, who spent £100, great, that means I've won £90. But looking further down the chain to say, okay, well, I spent £10 bringing the customer to the front door, and each customer we have on average spends £1,000 in the lifetime. So expanding out how those costs can look, rather than sort of looking at an initial, this is what we've spent, this is what we've won. You know, you've actually won a customer. You don't need to look at it as just you've sold a product. And then once they're in that, in your ecosystem as a retailer, again, you can say, look back at the loyalty programs and bring those customers back continually. Like always, simplification is what customers love to help, you know, balance those rising costs. It's making sure you've got a simple checkout process. It's making sure that your customer service is brilliant and all the people you're partnering with deliver the same customer service. All those kind of things, just to improve that satisfaction of the customer, is really going to help balance those costs when it comes to retention as well, which is perfect.
Yeah, one of the things you mentioned there was the checkout process and making that really simple. And obviously, a big part of that, especially in this day and age, is the variation in finance options that businesses have available. So I'd love to delve into that a little bit more and basically find out if finance options can help retailers offset the cost of acquisition and improve customer retention at all.
Yeah, I think finance is always been a product used for high ticket, big purchases. You know, you think of your sofas and things like that, which has always been a key driver for repeat purchases and initial purchase. I think it's now been used across a whole variety of different products now, from smaller things all the way up. But I think ultimately customer behaviour has changed drastically. A lot of people want what they want when they want it and want to buy it how they want to buy it. Allowing customers that option to do that is key, and finance can answer a lot of those questions. You know, being able to spread the cost allows the customer to buy it now. Rather than saving for 12 months, they can purchase the product now. Or, as we're finally getting some money on our savings, some customers would rather keep their money in the bank, maybe for a rainy day in case the boiler breaks next month, but still want to buy the product. So although they can afford it, they're just thinking, actually, I'd rather use someone else's money to purchase that, so I can then spread that on a monthly basis. I think where most of us pay our rent monthly, pay our mortgage monthly, car payments are monthly, a lot of buying habits is now, what can I afford per month, rather than how many have I got enough in the bank to cover everything. It's actually, I earn £2,000 a month, I spend £1,000 a month, I've got £1,000 left. This product here I want to buy is £200 a month, I can easily afford that. And it's having that, it's being able to tap into that customer demographic who are shopping in that way. Finance really delivers that. And the way that Navuna really helped in that instance as well is back on that personalisation and that individual customer intent that we spoke about. So here at Navuna, when we don't just approve people and give you sort of a yes or a no on the product you're looking to buy, we'll come back and try and tailor those options to best suit that customer in their current position. So a customer may come in, try and buy something for £2,000, where there's been such a rise in living costs and expenditure, a lot of customers haven't kept up with that, so they don't quite understand their own budget. So they could be asking for a £2,000 loan to buy a sofa, for example. They could have afforded it 2 years ago, but in this climate, they can't quite afford it. So rather than just declining that customer, we can then come back and say, well, actually, you can borrow £1,500, because that's what your affordability shows. So you can either pay a bigger deposit or choose a different product entirely, or maybe extend the term. So if you could afford £100 a month, then we define the term that best suits that customer. And in the reverse as well, so if a customer does come in, they apply for £2,000, if their affordability comes back and it looks really good, we could come back and say, actually, you can have £3,000 today. So then that allows the customer to, instead of buying, say, the two-seater today and they're going to buy the one-seater next year, or another room needed a bed, for example, they can then put those purchases in one go, which really helps the retailer, really helps the customer, and allows them to do that. So we offer as much flexibility as we really, really can, just so we can approve as many customers as we can, while still being exceptionally responsible on who we're lending to and how we're lending those funds. So it really can create a lot of loyalty if you do have a customer that gets approved for finance. From some of the data that we get back from our surveys we do with customers, is that if they know they've been approved at this retailer, they're probably going to go back there, because they feel like that's an open channel. I know I'm going to get approved, as long as their circumstances haven't changed, and the customer will probably come back and repurchase with you, because they have that line of credit in essence. They know the lender, and that can drive some real comfort around for a customer to come back and purchase, because sometimes applying for finance for a lot of people is, will I, won't I? I might not get approved. I don't want to be embarrassed in the store, for example. So retailers that are being approved, we do find them come back quite regularly.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, personalization, it's a huge driver of business these days. We know that businesses have to be more adaptable to customer needs and wants. So what I would love to know from you is if there are any other pieces of advice that you'd give to a retailer looking to implement or maybe enhance their own personalization strategies.
Definitely. And as you say, it's key nowadays to driving that customer behaviour. Everyone expects that kind of delivery from their retailers. And I think it does all come back to what we said earlier around treating customers like individuals. I think there was a period of time where it was sort of mass automation, similarity. We just fire the same message out to everyone, hope it hits, and we win that way. Where nowadays, say, everyone expects to be treated like an individual, because we are all individuals and our tastes are different. And with what we can access nowadays in the palm of our hand, we can really hone in on what our tastes are. So treating customers like individuals is the key point to personalization.
Right, exactly.
And again, what we mentioned earlier around that first party data, so the data you've got, again, can really drive that. No one knows how your customers purchasing your products better than yourself. So it's really going into detail, looking at understanding their purchase history, understanding their browsing behaviour, and taking the time to really understand that and try and contextualise it in some way, so that you can then deliver that back to the customer in a way that you know they interact with you, which is key to driving that as well. Looking at, you know, omnichannel, spoken about a lot as well. So if a retailer is online, they want the same experience as they do when they're in store. You'll find a lot of retailers or customers nowadays will start their journey online and will end up in store, and vice versa. So it's having that consistency across all those channels to make sure that the personalization is the same all the way along, because you could possibly see a lot of dropout if the customer comes in store, gets a really nice personalized experience from the store, and then they go online, then it just loses that and it becomes generic and standard. You know, that could be an area that a customer could say, oh, I've had a real different journey here. I'm not happy with that. So ensuring that, say, across all the channels, it's the same. And I think with most things, it's probably, if you're new to it, you're not really pushed that much of the business. It's starting small. I think if you go big bang and you try and put every single tool in the world that there is currently for personalization, you could end up losing track of your cost of acquisition, as you said at the beginning, by just not knowing and then burying your head in the sand. So I think starting small, begin with small targeted areas, see what's working, see how your customers are reacting, and then build on top of those. So then over time, you kept control of how that looks. You probably kept a bigger control on the costs that it's attributed to, because you started small and you're just adding bits on top. And that way you're going to get really personalised to your exact customer base. As I said previously, you know your customers better than any third-party tool, better than any data you can go and purchase. You know, they're your customers for a reason. So you'll probably know that best. But yeah, highlighting those successful channels as you're growing, putting your resource in those channels, forgetting about the channels that aren't really performing, even if your biggest competitor is doing really well in that channel, is not working for you, follow the data and sit in those channels that are working exceptionally well. I think one untested area I probably don't know too much about is hitting in that AI industry. Obviously, AI is just booming currently, and I don't know the answer to that one, but then there's lots of tools out there where you can start looking at personalization through AI and how that can look from that initial inception of a customer online, and how you can sort of leverage that as well.
Yeah, AI is such an interesting topic. I think we could probably take up a whole other podcast with how it's augmenting the customer experience and the retailer's experience as well of acquisition and retention. But I'm really sorry to say we're very, very nearly out of time, Phil, but it's been such a pleasure to speak to you. I'm wondering if, just to cap us off, you don't mind telling me, obviously we've done this incredible piece of research, which for our listeners will be linked down below, but what were the biggest things that jumped out at you from this research? I would love to know that.
I'm going to be a bit boring and just go back to what we spoke to earlier. I mean, I still can't get over the fact that 25% of people or retailers have no idea what their costs are, and 35% of people just elect not to measure it. That really has shocked me. And it probably makes sense now with a few conversations I've had with retailers where this hasn't quite resonated, where we're talking about this, because there's no substance behind that conversation, because they're not tracking that whatsoever. That, to me, I can't get over that. I mean, the report's got lots of information in there, but those two bits are the bits that keep jumping out at me and sort of surprise me each time I read it and reread it to make sure we haven't got the numbers the wrong way around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I guess the big question then is, what should our readers do if they are in that 25% or indeed that 35%? What should they do?
Yeah, well, I think they need to take the first steps. The people that aren't measuring it at all need to take those first steps into understanding what could be all the different inputs into the cost of acquisition. You know, you've got to be looking at things like your marketing and ad expenses, your cost of your sales and marketing teams, any technology and tools and things like that you're using, and actually set some time aside to really list out where you're spending money when you're trying to win a customer or get a current customer purchasing again. And that has to be the first step. Educate yourself into understanding how that looks. Don't be afraid of actually challenging that head on. Just say, set that time aside to go through it.
And then I guess, of course, always reading the report will help massively. So yeah, look, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you, Phil. Thank you so much for making the time. To our listeners, thank you for listening along. And you can download that report just below this podcast. So go ahead and check that out. And we will be back with another episode in the very near future. Thanks so much.